Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
One thing I've told our program, you know, actually 3 years ago, we were kind of just, you know, beginning of the year type stuff. I'm never going to apologize for being passionate. And that's the last thing I ever want them to apologize for either. Passion is what drives this program. When that starts going down for me, I think that's when I know I'm going to be done, because that's so important for me.
And our guest this week, Dan Prusiner. He is the head men's basketball coach at Eastern University. His squad coming off a fantastic season, second round of the NCAA tournament. And Dan, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
So coming off a successful season, but regardless of the season, I'm curious, how long does it take you to kind of decompress and catalog the previous year? Is it something that happens relatively quickly, or does it something that lingers into the late spring, early summer, or does it depend on the year and how things went?
Well, I think it's a short period, whatever season it is. But I think some seasons that short period is even shorter, and I think other seasons you kind of extend that a little bit longer. You know, I think this year was one of those years we tried to extend it a little bit longer from the success that we had, and we enjoyed it. But at the same time, you know, you're already, you know, back on the ground, just trying to grind and, you know, get that next class in. So it kind of wavers a little bit, but not much.
How much has life changed with the transfer portal for you? And even if it hasn't affected your roster, just in how you approach recruiting and things like that, has it changed much for you?
Well, I don't know how much. It definitely has changed a lot for us, but I don't think maybe the way it has for everybody else. You know, at the higher levels, it's mad chaos, right? Like it's just, you can't sit down and look at a roster right now, you know, thinking that, hey, I'm going to watch that kid his sophomore year. You have no idea where he's going to be at, you know? And so for us, it's a little bit different. And we kind of had to take a little bit of an approach with that. I think the Division III level, you get that fifth year, right? And that fifth year for the last 4 years has been something that's been big for a lot of programs, but that's going away next year, right? So like, you know, it's something that we've kind of discussed as a staff and try to figure out how do we want to go about this. I think the big thing with us is that we've profited a lot over the fact that a lot of these, you know, higher level schools just aren't recruiting high school kids, you know, and I've talked to numerous Division I coaches from Power Five to lower level Division I schools. And the reality of it is nobody's recruiting high school kids. They may take one or two at most, you know, so you're talking about the 4 stars, the 5 stars are being recruited out of high school. But then after that, it's kind of wide open. So for us, you know, our approach really hasn't been very much in the transfer portal. We did take one transfer last year. He was within the conference, so we kind of knew who he was a little bit. But then other than that, we've honestly been recruiting high school kids, and I think we've reaped the benefits of a lot of these guys overlooking some of these kids. Not saying we have Division I kids all the time, but like a lot of these are scholarship kids, we feel like. And our approach has been, you know, kind of recruiting later in the process. So this whole transfer portal thing's really helped us out, you know, because our recruiting is March, April, May. So we're kind of in the thick of it right now. But, you know, I think it's benefited us quite a bit.
You mentioned it being chaos at the higher levels, and that is obvious. I mean, every day, if you just scroll through social media, dozens of kids going from here to there. Do you think we're going to find a pace with this, or do you think this chaos is going to be life for the foreseeable future?
Well, it's not just the portal, right? It's the whole NIL thing, and the combination of both of them, I think, is going to be, it's going to be a problem that there's going to have some, you know, some litigation. I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, how are we going to, you know, put some parameters on this? And it's crazy because, you know, some of these lower level Division I schools don't have maybe $500,000 at the most. And then you're talking about, you know, Arkansas getting 10, which was what is out there. You know, who knows? You know, like how can these small teams compete with some of these higher level teams? Now, I do think they will compete. I mean, that's the beauty of college basketball, right? Especially the NCAA tournament. But I do think there has to be some type of, they got to come in some way, shape or form and try to put, you know, some parameters on how these kids are getting paid. And another thing too, is now a big question is, you know, when you get these kids in these NIL contracts, you know, how long do they have to, you know, fulfill these contracts? And a lot of them are leaving before the contract is even being filled. And some of these contracts are coming out saying like, hey, listen, you got to be here through this certain date in order for this contract to get to not be null and void. So it's interesting. I don't know how it's going to work, but there definitely does need to be some kind of changes, I feel like.
Pivoting back to your program, mentioned NCAA tournament this year. You get to the second round. You made the NCAA tournament a couple years ago. You've kind of staked out new ground for Eastern basketball. Do you feel like the program has risen a couple levels here, taking it to a different plateau the last couple seasons?
I do. I think we've kind of gotten the monkey off our back, I feel like, to a certain extent. You know, I do think a lot, we're kind of getting, got that conference championship. We got to the NCAA tournament, which is just, I mean, the reality of it is it's one or two more games than what they've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. You know, Eric McNally's did a phenomenal job with the program. And we were just kind of right there. We were able to take over something that was, I feel like, on the verge of being, you know, being successful. And so the funny thing is like Eric is our athletic director. So we kind of go back and forth. He's definitely a different style than what I am. So we've kind of changed styles a little bit, but ultimately that this program was on the verge of being, you know, being where we're at right now. So I do feel like, yes, we've been able to get over that hump, but you know, we've been in the playoffs for 8 straight years. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the statistics within our conference, you know, top four teams make the playoffs, but when you go to the playoffs 8 straight years in a row, you know, that's something, that's a program that's there. Right. And so they've been doing it, you know, for 3 or 4 years before we got here, and we've been able just to kind of push it a little bit further, but it is something that we strive to do as a program, I feel like. And that's, you know, and that's getting better every day. And that day sometimes is obviously season wise, you know, that's kind of our focus. You know, we're setting a standard and then we want to raise that standard. And so I think definitely our program has been able to stay true to that philosophy over the last couple of years.
The Division III tournament, it is bang, bang, bang. I'm just kind of curious. You guys win the first round, lose the second. Highest of highs, and then I don't want to say lowest of lows, but incredible disappointment because it's so sudden. That's one of the things that it's bittersweet about. It's what makes it so incredible, because, you know, every game is a win or go home. But from a standpoint, when it's over, it is over. And just, you know, you're talking about a 24, 26 hour period where you go from winning the first NCAA tournament game in program history to the season being over. What's that emotional ride like for you as a coach and as the leader of the group, and what you see from the kids?
First of all, I hate the fact that the NCAA allows us 24 hours at the Division III level. I think it's a shame you don't get to be able to have that 48 hour period, which is, you know, that extra 24 is huge. But regardless of that, I'll get off my soapbox as far as that goes. For us, and you kind of hit on a second ago with us trying to, you know, we're kind of going through some uncharted territory right now as a program, and you know never been in the NCAA tournament until 2 years ago, and then winning the conference championship this year. It's tough because you want to embrace what these guys have accomplished, and you know, we had some seniors this year that, you know, that were with us from the start. And Jerron Fairweather, who was, you know, runner up player of the year at our conference, you know, he was one of my first recruits, and having him go through all that whole process. And even, you know, this class that just graduated, you know, you want to embrace those things. So you go to you have these highs, and that conference championship was unbelievable for our guys. But you're right. Then you hit this low, but sometimes it's not really that big of a low either, you know, and I think the low should probably come from those underclassmen that have to go back and have to lock in going into this next year. And hopefully, you know, hopefully they can embrace that low and push us, you know, obviously to the standard and raise that standard that we talk about every day. As a coach, you kind of navigate that a little bit, you know, afterwards, you know, you look to your young guys and you're like, yeah, listen, this is what it's like. Now let's get back here. And then you look at your guys that are leaving you, and you start to get a little bit of a tear in your eye too. And this year was different though. I think it's fun when you win a conference championship, especially for us, for the first time in school history, winning one. It was something that was kind of easy to, when you get beat, you kind of got a little bit lesser of a fall, I feel like, to a certain extent. But that being said, it's quick, it's sweet, it's done. And then, you know, we talked about earlier, you're kind of locked in going into next year trying to raise that standard.
So now let's talk a little bit about your background. Growing up, was basketball your number one sport? Or were you doing a lot of different things? Or did you start with one sport and then gravitate to hoops?
It's funny, So I grew up, I'm a Midwest boy. I grew up in Kansas City. I was born in Iowa. So I, you know, kind of actually on a farm, to be honest with you. My dad was a farmer, didn't have a whole lot of, you know, hoops growing up. I think, you know, by the time I eventually moved to Kansas City and got off the farm and fell in love with hoops, probably my seventh, eighth grade year in middle school. And from there, it was just one of those things that just got me. And I really didn't play anything else growing up, but yeah, it kind of stuck with me a little bit. I felt like like most kids, you know, you hit a couple shots outside and you feel that love, you feel that passion for it. And you just want to keep doing it. You want to keep striving. It becomes a part of you. And so definitely got in my blood at a young age and kind of navigated my way through, you know, playing a little bit of college basketball and then now into coaching. So didn't have a lot of family members that played or anything like that. Just some crazy way I fell in love with it.
Yeah. What was that? I mean, you talk about that kind of that rush of hitting a couple of shots and how that sticks with you. But were there other things about the game that resonated with you? The strategy, anything like that? And, you know, not that you looked at it like a coach in seventh grade, but I mean, you know, when you kind of look back and if you were to kind of dissect how you fell in love with basketball, what are some of the other boxes that you think it checked for you that made you go all in with it?
I think, you know, I think probably my high school coach as well as my college coach can probably attest to this, but, you know, never being the most athletic kid out there, but finding ways, basketball gave me a way to impact the sport, you know, outside of just scoring, right? And I think I always loved that part about the game. And that was, you know, showing effort on the floor through your own actions, but then at the same time, understand that you could affect the game in so many different ways other than just putting that ball through that hoop. And then the more I grew with it, the more I realized that simple stuff is talking and communicating through the game and just being able to affect the game through attitude and effort. It made me fall in love with it, you know, and that was huge. Cause, you know, even when I got to college, I didn't play a ton in college, but I always knew that I could affect this game in practice. I could affect this game, you know, whether I'm on a scout team or wherever I'm at, just because I'm not scoring the ball, I'm not, you know, invisible. And so, you know, as a player that kind of had that mentality a little bit, you know, it was always one of those things where I didn't have to be the best player on the floor to have an impact. And I think that kind of caught me a little bit. And maybe be the reason why I fell in love with it.
Scout yourself as a player. What were you like? Like if you were putting you as a kid in high school and college on the whiteboard for your team, what are the bullet points on you?
You know, what's crazy is we, you know, as a team, we were trying to get together before they all left campus. And I was going through my attic and I found some college game film that was on a VHS tape. And so DMR SID went to his dad's house, and his dad had a VHS player, and so he actually got it out this last weekend. Me and Dan were watching some of it. So it's crazy you're asking me this question. I probably wouldn't have made the scouting report as far as having to worry about me on the offensive end. That's for sure. Definitely a defensive guy. You know, I was kind of known for just kind of being that lockdown guy that's going to do that on the floor. But you're probably playing 3 or 4 feet off me because, you know, that jumper was never consistent by any stretch.
Now, you played college at Northland International University in Wisconsin, right?
Correct.
What kind of led you there? Was it the basketball opportunity, or was it what they were offering educational and basketball was a wonderful add-on?
1,000% basketball. You're talking about a high school kid that, and actually I went up after the first semester of my freshman year. So my high school coach actually ran like this camp in the summer, and the college coach I was coaching there at the time, Dennis Scott, came down and held a camp at my high school and saw me playing out there. And, you know, he eventually, you know, reached out to me and said, "Hey, listen, come up with the semester break and then we'll start going into the following year." So that was a roller coaster of a ride for me, to be honest with you, because that was Northland was probably 2 hours north of Green Bay, Wisconsin. So if you know where that's at, like, that's, you're talking about, you know, you're walking out in 4 or 5 feet of snow quite a bit. And so, but that was, you know, that was an incredible experience. I loved it. I loved every bit of it. You know, my sophomore year after I got up, or the next semester after I got up there, you know, my coach actually brought me into his office and said, "I don't got a spot for you on the team anymore." So basically I kind of got cut, and I told him, I said, "Listen," so I'm all the way up here, I'm coming to practice. And so I kind of just showed up at practice and just kind of stood there, and eventually, you know, he gave me a jersey, and eventually that kind of led to another thing. And, you know, I was a senior captain, you know, when I finally got done with it. So it was definitely a roller coaster of a ride that I feel like I can relate to a lot of kids, especially the coaching now, you know, and you understand what they're going through. And this is, you know, it makes them who we are, though, too. It really does. And that's what I love about hoops. You know, you talked about as a young kid, kind of what made you fall in love with it. Now, kind of looking at things, it makes us who we are. It really does. And there's so many kids nowadays are judged, I think, in so many ways. And you know, like, "I'm not good enough to play for this team, so I'm a failure. I didn't make this college. I couldn't play college basketball, so I'm a failure." It's not the case at all. And so, especially the way the game is now, it's so hard for kids to play at the next level. But at the same time, what they don't realize is that this game has truly made them the person that they are. And so it's cool to see those things. But yeah, that's kind of how that went down.
So they didn't have a spot for you. What happened? Was there a transfer that came in that kind of screwed up the numbers, or was it
honestly, I think he got up there and he had more kids there than he needed at the time. And so it was kind of one of those things where, you know, "Hey, listen, you're not on the roster." And I was devastated. I can remember sitting in the hallway back when we had the phones that were on the cord, you know, and on the phone with my mom, bawling, crying my eyes out. Like, I was like, I was devastated. And you know, I think she just kind of encouraged me to keep going and see what happens. And honestly, I mean, we're talking about, you know, almost 20 years from now, ago right now, but I somehow worked myself back onto that team and made it happen. So yeah, I think that's kind of what happened.
Do you remember the moment when you realized you'd punched through? And yeah, was it "Hey, you're now a part," or was it just one of those where, like you said, all of a sudden you showed up and one day you were into the 5-on-5 scrimmage?
I definitely think it was a gradual thing. You know, I think it was a situation where, you know, coach said, "Hey, listen, come out to practice," started practicing a little bit. You know, "Let me, you know, I'm sure injury here, there, whatever the case is." And then they needed some extra guys. And so you kind of jump in there and you show the effort. And then, you know, going into the next season, you know, the following season, so it had been my sophomore year, I guess you would say, my full sophomore year, you know, he threw a jersey at me. He said, "Hey, listen, I got a roster spot for you." So then it just kind of slowly went from there.
Do you have a favorite memory from a game, a moment where something you did that if you think back to your playing days there in college, that's at the top of the list?
So again, that, you know, that videotape that I found, there's a reason I found that videotape. There's probably a reason I kept that videotape, but I had 17 points. I know it doesn't sound like a whole lot, but I had 17 points in a game. And the unfortunate part about it is I think we actually lost that game, but it was kind of cool. It was my last home game at Northland. And you know, I think I had like 12 points in the last 3 minutes of the game or something like that. So it was a pretty fun experience. But yeah, that one kind of sticks out the most. And, you know, obviously that's kind of a personal thing, but we had a lot of great games in college too that, you know, that I can kind of think back and realize there were some pretty highlight moments.
So when does coaching enter the discussion? I mean, you talk about your love for the sport, and I think kind of the trail you followed, it almost seems like the natural next step to go into coaching. Did you feel that way, or is it something that, you know, an opportunity comes up and you're like, oh, sure, let's give that a shot?
You know, I was having a conversation with a former player of mine last night on the phone, and we were kind of talking about this exact same thing. And he asked me the same question. He said, you know, when did you know you wanted to coach? And for me, there was never really a question, right? Like basketball became something that I loved so much that I knew I couldn't probably go on doing anything else that didn't have anything to do with it, you know? And so coaching, like you just said, the coaching was a natural thing. And it's funny, you know, 20 years ago, GAs were around, graduate assistants were around and stuff like that, and trying to get into the game that way. And probably I always wanted to be a college coach, but I never really knew how to get there. And so I graduated out of college, got married a few months after I graduated, and I went and took a job at a private school in Florida, just being a JV coach and just trying to get in that way, you know? And so I don't know if there was an exact moment or anything. I just think that it was just kind of in my blood. And I knew, listen, this is what I love, you know, and I got to keep doing it.
How was the transition from going from player to coach, just from the taking on of the responsibility, being responsible for young kids, dealing with everything that goes along with dealing with young kids? You know, what was it? What was the transition like? Were there ever any moments of doubts of, well, maybe not? Or was it always, this is where we're going to be?
Honestly, no. I don't think there was any doubts about it. The funny thing is my first job. So my wife's actually from this area in the Reading area, and she was teaching at this school, and they asked her to be the middle school girls basketball coach. And so I was actually my wife's assistant, my very first coaching job. How awesome is that? But it didn't take much. I mean, and that was 6 months out of college. And, you know, I mean, I had these seventh grade girls, you know, running this. It's all I knew, right? So, like, we were running the same drills we ran in college, you know? And so, like, but I absolutely loved it. I fell in love with it at that point. And it was one of those things where it was kind of a natural thing. And then the longer it's grown, you know, I think at that moment in time, I'm doing it because I love basketball. Now it gets to the point where you really see why you're doing these things, you know, and yeah, having the conversation I had last night with a 26-year-old, I could say kid, he's definitely not a kid no more, but you realize why you're doing these things, and that's impacting kids' lives and trying to push them in ways that they can become more successful. And then that's when you start realizing, like, hey, listen, I did it because I love the game, but now I really realize why I'm doing this, and it makes it so much more fulfilling, you know, knowing you're being able to impact these kids' lives.
Just curious, when you and your wife are working together on a staff there, did you talk hoops at home, or were there rules in place that this is the gym and this is home?
I'm pretty sure my wife was the head coach, but I kind of took over, I think. So, there wasn't a whole lot of conversation going home about things other than she was probably telling me to shut up on the sideline, and I was way too adamant and yelling at referees of middle school girls' game. So
we need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Eastern University head men's basketball coach Dan Prusiner in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Dan Prusiner, head men's men's basketball coach at Division III Eastern University in St. David's. Do you remember the first time as a coach when you felt like you directly impacted a game where you called a set and got exactly the look you want, or something you had worked on with a kid on the side for a while, it translated to the game? Do you have a first aha moment as a coach?
You know what's funny is I don't know if I have an aha moment. I tell you what I do have. I probably have three or four different aha moments from my assistant coaches, you know, which is kind of cool too. You know, I can remember, I had a former player of mine that came back and coached with me. He actually was a GA at Florida State for a few years. And I took him to a team camp, you know, as my assistant coach after he graduated. And, you know, I kind of gave him the huddle and we were down, you know, down two, whatever the case is. He drew up a play. We hit a three at the buzzer. And I can remember sitting back and just watching him, you know, and how pumped up he was about what he did. But, I can think back of a two or three different moments of my assistant coaches, but I don't know. I don't really have one particularly for myself, but I definitely do know that there have been times where it's just been like, okay, that was fulfilling. We worked on that, or, you know, obviously that, you know, that play that we put a lot of effort into, you know, really helped us out a lot. So probably too much of that in 20 years of coaching that it's kind of all scrambled now.
How long do you feel like it took you to be kind of in complete control of the game? What I mean by that is kind of understand how far you can go with a ref, understanding the importance of timeouts and when to use them and stuff like that. I think a lot of it sounds easy to anyone that watches basketball, but when you're in the middle of the fire there and you've got the bullets flying and you're the decision maker, it can be a lot. Was that something you were comfortable with right away, or is that something there was a little trial and error early in your career?
I think I'm still trying to figure it out, to be honest with you. I don't think we ever stop learning. I think there's a lot of situations, you know, every year I, you know, kind of sit there and, you know, kind of evaluate yourself a little bit and how you can get better at things. And, you know, I definitely don't think you ever stop learning with it. I got a lot of former players of mine that come back and watch me on the sidelines now, and they compare it to, you know, 10 years ago. And, you know, they all say it's different. They all say, wow, you change as a coach, you coach different styles, whatever the case is. So obviously I feel like I have evolved a little bit, but, you know, I don't know necessarily if there is kind of one specific way that I can sit there and say, like, I've figured this out. And it definitely is not a scenario of figuring anything out. I do feel like I've gotten better at situations. I do, you know, with the referees, obviously going from the high school level to the college level, that's different. And knowing how much you can push a referee and talk to a referee and kind of figuring that out. I think this is big too. I think utilizing your assistants is something that I think has really helped our program out a ton, is me trying to figure out ways to use them appropriately and you know, even giving them timeouts, allowing them to kind of go. Because that's one thing I figured out. I don't have a head coach truly doesn't have like this whole thing controlled at all. You're just trying to control as much as you can control, and then being able to put guys in the right positions to be able to do what they can do. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it for the most part. I definitely do feel like I evolved a little bit, but I don't know necessarily if I figured it out by any means.
How have you changed from a personality standpoint as a coach from the beginning of your career to this point? Do you think you are basically the same person? Have you mellowed? Are you a little more intense? Where would you say you've changed on the scale?
I think my intense moments are just as intense. I think I have less of them than I did when I was younger. My wife probably would tell you the opposite. Like, you know, she still thinks I'm a maniac on the sideline. But I also think too, one thing I've told our program, you know, actually 3 years ago, we were kind of just, you know, beginning of the year type stuff. I'm never going to apologize for being passionate. And that's the last thing I ever want them to apologize for either. Passion is what drives this program. And so when that starts going down for me, I think that's when I know I'm going to be done, because that's so important for me. And you got to have passion for it. You talked about earlier, one of those things where, like, how did you know as a player, like, what made you fall in love with the game as a player? And that was, I think that was one of them too, is being able to express how much passion you have and love for something out on the floor. And so, you know, as a coach, I look at things right now and I definitely have not figured it out by any stretch. And I don't know if I've changed a ton, but passion, I do feel like the passion side of things is something that I've never, I always want to be known for. You know, I'd so much rather be that coach. It's like, wow, he's kind of crazy on the sideline. Well, I hope I am a little crazy. You know, I hope I am someone that my players can sit there and say, wow, that coach really wants to win. And he wants to give everything he has for us on the sideline. And so I don't know. I think probably I have mellowed a little bit, but probably not a ton.
So you were down in Florida for several years coaching high school, then Fayetteville in North Carolina for 4 years coaching high school. Did you think high school was going to be what the game was going to be for you for the duration, or did you hit a point where I really would like to try college?
You know, I think, you know, as a player, you know, you have these, you aspire to be obviously the greatest player you could possibly be. In seventh and eighth grade, you're sitting there, you know, or I'm sitting there watching, you know, Michael Jordan on WGN, you know, and all the Bulls games and thinking, I can be John Paxson. You know, I can do that. I can be in the NBA. And then reality hits down the road. And then, like, you know, you figure out, okay, that's changed now. Now I just want to play college basketball, right? Like, that's just the ultimate goal. And so as a coach, I'm kind of the same way. I feel like, you know, when I got into it, you know, being a college coach was kind of one of those things where that was kind of the ultimate dream, I feel like. As a high school coach, and like I told you earlier, I kind of came up and just got my teaching degree and figured out this is the best way I could get into coaching is to be a teacher. And so kind of went that route and got my head coaching job finally as a high school coach. And then once I did that for a while, you know, I was thinking to myself, well, man, I'd love to coach at a college level. So I would say probably for 7-8 years preceding when I got this job, I definitely was pushing for it, and probably too much, to be quite honest with you. Applying to a lot of different jobs all over the country and trying to get into those situations. The crazy thing is this, is that when I finally got to that point where I said, you know what, I'm going to lock in and just stop focusing on this dream and just be as good of a high school coach as I could possibly be. When I kind of embraced that, that's when things doors started opening a little bit for me. And so, you know, yeah, I always used to say, you know, if I could get a small college Division III job somewhere, I'd be happy. You know, that's kind of the dream job for me. And God somehow worked it out and absolutely ecstatic that I get to do this every day.
What was specifically the opening that got you to Eastern? Because you came on as associate head coach at first. Am I correct?
Correct. You know, Eric McNally, our athletic director, was the head coach at the time. We kind of known each other for, you know, probably 15 years or so. He was actually, he was a high school coach in Miami when I was a high school coach, kicked the living tar out of me every time he played me. It wasn't even funny. But, you know, when he eventually got the job up here and did a phenomenal job. And then he kind of always knew that I would love to get my wife back up near her family. And so, you know, he reached out to me and kind of opened the opportunity up and it worked out. So yeah, that's kind of how we got back up here.
What was the transition dealing with high school kids to dealing with college? Was it a big deal, or was it really, for the most part, maybe the problems are different and some of the things you have to deal with are different, but the concept is the same?
I think the concept's definitely the same. I think it's different. I think the cool part about the college level is that you kind of get to choose, right? Like, we don't have scholarships here, obviously, but we still get to recruit, right? And you still get to recruit your guys and the players that you want. And then I think as well is it's one of those things too, where you get to take kids and know, put it this way. When I first took over the program, we had some really good players here, but at the same time, they were kind of getting in their junior and senior years. Right. So then we had to bring some fresh blood in and we brought them in. You know, it's one of those things where you figure out, like, okay, what kind of style are we going to play? And then after that, you got to figure out, okay, what kind of player are we really recruiting here? And for me, it was different because, you know, I'd never done this before. I was a high school coach for 15 years. And so figuring that piece out was really tough for me. And it took a little bit. I was super lucky to get a classic hit. I had Sam Gallardo and Jerron Fairweather, both phenomenal Eastern basketball players that are, you know, they're going to be known right here for a while. But I was able to grab those type of kids. And then once I got them in the program, they kind of started to establish who they were. And then it's kind of funny, like, we're like, okay, these guys love the pressure of the basketball. These guys love to play this style. All right, let's recruit around those guys a little bit now. And then we start recruiting around those guys. And then all of a sudden, wait, we have a philosophy now. We have kind of a vision of where we're going. And so once you get that part of it, the cool part is that you get to start recruiting kids now that A, fit your philosophy and your style, but then B, you know, character wise, who they are, what kind of people they are, like, you know, then you start to get specific on those things too. And where we're at now is definitely a lot different than where we were 5 or 6 years ago. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, we're just grabbing guys, right? Like, we're just trying to figure this out. And I got lucky, I'll be honest with you, with the class that I got. But then now we're getting to that, I'm not going to say elite level, but now we won that conference championship. And now we're starting to play at a higher level. Now we can sit and be like, okay, not only your philosophy's got to be right, not only the style of play has got to be correct for us, but then now we can really get specific and find out who these kids are and start building that program, building our program that way. And so that part is probably the biggest difference between high school and college. And you know, at the same time, another thing too is, in if you don't fit in at the college level, you got to go as well. I mean, that's just the reality of it. You know, high school, you're trying to, you kind of get what you get, and you kind of got to work with it. So, which probably I feel like is molding me in the coach I am. I do feel like coaching the high school level really is the foundation of who I am. And that's kind of cool. And I can kind of look back at those things and be like, okay, I can handle this situation a lot better than I could have handled if I probably would just jump right straight into college basketball.
When you came on as associate that first year, was it kind of understood that, you know, eventually he was probably going to jump up to AD and good chance that things worked out? Like, was it, even if not in writing or anything, just that's how we're looking at this?
Yeah, it was. And it kind of worked out. He actually, Trey Montgomery left and he got a job at University of Penn, which was his assistant coach. And you know, God kind of just worked it out. We actually came up in October, believe it or not, and took my family, you know, and in a situation where my kids are already in school and kind of all that. And so we kind of moved up here. Believe it or not, five of us, you know, went from a 2,400 square foot house to a 2-bedroom apartment on campus for 6 months. So that was pretty fun, before we found a house in the area. So it was a little bit chaotic. But yes, at the same time, like, we kind of knew, you know, he kind of knew that, you know, he would definitely be going to athletic director and then I'd begin the position.
And I'm just curious, for that 1 year where you're associate, one chair down on the bench, after so many years as a head coach, and I don't care about the level, just the head coach, right, the point person for the official, the person, was it difficult? And I don't mean it like you were being disrespectful or anything, but just from a reflexive standpoint, when you're on the bench, to not do things that a head coach does just because you'd been doing it for so long?
I honestly, no, I don't think so. It really wasn't difficult. I absolutely loved it. And especially being under Eric, it was awesome to be able to be a guy that's been coaching the college level. And he's even coached at the Division I level, but to be able to sit there and tap into a lot of those different things that, you know, that you get to learn from. And so, like, to me, I was a sponge, right? Like, I was loving every bit of it. And then I think the other piece too was, you know, going from the high school side of things to the college side of things, right? And so, like, when you do those things, you know, it's a little bit different, right? And so it's kind of like, oh wow, this is different, this is new. And so I was probably more just kind of observing things and trying to just take things in than I was trying to figure out, wait, how am I going to do this next year as a head coach? You know, so it was interesting, but I absolutely love being an assistant. You know, I told him afterwards, like, I could do this for another year if you need me to. Like, it was a blast.
Do you prefer games or practices? Like, if you could only do one for whatever reason, would it be games or would it be practice?
Honestly, probably for a selfish reason, I would say practice. You know, and I think it does. it does give you the opportunity to do your craft. We have very little control. You know, you talked about control of the game earlier. The players are in control of this game. You know, we can sit there and say that we don't have any control of it. And so preparing them, obviously, is an exciting piece to it. And so, yeah, if you had to make me choose one, I probably do enjoy practice a little more than the games.
You talked about, you know, how you've got kind of, there's a vision now, and there's kind of like what Eastern basketball is. Like you said, the program had success before, but the last few years, it's kind of different. Is there conversations with the kids on the team? Like, listen, life's a little different now. You're a defending conference champ. You are an NCAA tournament game winner. Like, not just the standard's been raised, but how everybody else looks at you has changed over the last couple of years as well. And it's up to you to hold up your end of that bargain. Are there conversations with the group on that?
Absolutely. My assistant and I went out to lunch an hour ago, and we were talking about the same exact thing. And it's one of those things, it's a fear that you have, right? And when you have good players that come through your program and that are so locked into your vision and they understand your vision and they leave your program and you sit there and you wonder, okay, how do we keep this going? Right. And so how do we hold that standard and then even push that standard even higher? And so those conversations absolutely do take place. And whether, like most programs, we have exit interviews at the end of the year with all of our players individually. And so those are topics that are brought up often. And they're topics that as a staff we talk about as well. And the thing is what you're talking about right there is the personality of the player. It's what players you have when you recruit these players that are going to see that vision and see that standard and see that point of like, hey, listen, Eastern University basketball is here, right? And now we got to take it to another level. And so I think we push that as a program, but I also think it's the kids you recruit as well. I think that goes back to what I said earlier is like when we start recruiting some of these kids, you know, that's kind of what we're looking for is someone that's going to sit there and say, you know what, I'm going to embrace the competition. I'm going to embrace the fact that like Eastern University is what it is. And now it's my job, not only to hold that standard, but to raise that standard. And we tell our guys all the time, even the guys that are going out I've heard a couple coaches talk about this. And I don't know if this is the right philosophy or the wrong philosophy. I have no idea, but we're straight up honest with our guys. We're going to go out and try to out recruit you. Your job is to go out and get better so we can out recruit you. And our guys embrace that. They love that mentality. If they don't love that mentality, they're probably not going to be here very long. There definitely is a mindset right now. And the cool part about it is we get to see it, right? Like we get to see alumni reaching back out to us, excited about it. You know, I had an alumni text me this morning being like, hey, listen, I never got a conference championship shirt. I want to send that. He was kind of upset that he didn't get one, you know? And so it's one of those things where you're starting to see community, Eastern community, kind of come together and raise this kind of vision, I guess you would say, of what we want this program to be. And so, it's exciting. It really is exciting. But the guys, I do really feel like especially our underclassmen, they're really embracing it. Like they really are. We had such great examples this last year with our seniors that have left us. And, you know, I think our guys see that and then they want to be that. And so, we're excited. We're excited about what the future holds for us.
Final question, favorite part of your job?
Probably the favorite part of my job is the times that you have afterwards. I think, I think this job is such a process driven job. I don't know if I could take one specific thing out of the process, but I definitely think the moments you have after the process are the favorite moments. The moments that you have that you've gone through these different scenarios with these kids and you've gone through these ups and downs with them. And then afterwards, when the process is done, well, quote, I guess, quote unquote, done, when that process of playing those 4 years of basketball are done, you know, when you get to talk to those guys a year or 2 years afterwards, hands down, like there's nothing that can come that's even better. And honestly, it's better than winning a conference championship. Is just seeing how they look back at the process and be like, coach, listen, I just got a job. I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't be able to do this job if it wasn't for going through the program, going through the different things that you guys had us go through. And so that's the cool part about it. I think hands down, that's probably the best thing.
Dan Prusiner, thanks so much. This was great.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Eastern University head men's basketball coach Dan Prusiner for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.me for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.